Hello, this is Mike, and I'm here with
Dan Rhino. What's up?
And today we're coming at you with our podcast called Comparing Apples to Oranges. The idea of this podcast started when I heard an NPR movie reviewer talking about the two movies, Terminator Genisys and Magic Mike XXL. And by the end of the review, he had decided that Terminator Genisys was a terrible movie and Magic Mike was a wonderful sequel. He was supposed to just review two things that seemingly have no connection, but he found similarities between them and managed to decide which one was better. And so that's what we're going to do today. And our topic is...
I actually thought we were just talking about apples and oranges. So that's all I've eaten for the last week. So I'm totally unprepared.
Your vitamin C levels are...
through the roof.
Right where they should
be. I can't get sick right now.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break and actually discuss what we're supposed to be doing. And we're back! All right. So, Dan, what's our topic for today?
I believe, since we are not talking about fruit, we are talking about emotionally charged albums.
That's exactly right. So tell us a little bit about what it... in an emotionally charged album is. What does it mean to you?
To me, I would think that when you're listening to the album, you are... The feelings of the artist are kind of coming through the music to you.
Right.
It's not just a song that you hear on the radio and you think that it's got a, you know, a catchy beat or something to sing along to. It's something that you can actually kind of know what was going through their mind when they were writing it, and maybe... even what was going on in their life,
right?
When that music was being produced.
There's probably going to be, you know, one or two singles that come off of it, but it's not anything that you would hear too much on the radio, usually because it sort of follows its own sort of emotional arc or a narrative, like you said, that happened in the person's life or that they want to tell the story of.
Definitely on one of the albums we're going to talk about today, I really felt that when I was listening to the album, and I actually went back to kind of look at what was going on in the artist's life at that time, and it really, I read that and connected that to the music. I even got a clearer picture, and it kind of put things in perspective a little bit more. Very interesting.
So now we're going to go over what we've designated as four criteria of a quality emotionally charged album. Number one is something that we had to look this up, and by look up I mean we spoke with an expert, is called the emotional contagion of the album. So that is defined as the ability for the artist to make you, the listener, feel how they are feeling. Number two, the faithfulness to the album's topic or theme. So if you're listening to a breakup CD, there's not like three or four songs about how happy those people are or how excited they are to be skydiving or something. That if the song is about, you know, losing your brother to addiction, that's you're going to follow the arc of that. Pretty dark, but that's what we talked about.
So it's not just an album of 12 individual singles.
Exactly.
There's actually some kind of continuity to it.
It's not the best of Bad Company, which they called 10 from 6. It is not going to be that. Okay, and the last two criteria we've got are...
re-listenability, which was the first thing that actually popped into my mind when we were kind of going over this and talking about what we saw in a quality album. The first thing I think of is, would I ever listen to that album again, or was it just a one-time thing? And we've all got those CDs or those collections that we'll just get out for no reason. We'll have that for some reason it pops in our head that, hey, I want to listen to that album from 30 years ago.
Right.
You know, if it's a Stevie Wonder, kind of comes up with me just periodically, just because those are albums that I was raised on and that have a really deep-rooted connection to me in different points in my life. And I'll just bring those albums up, you know, that came out 40 years ago,
right,
and listen to them just kind of out of nowhere. So a lot of re-listenability in quality albums. And some albums you hear once and then you tuck them away and they're never heard from again.
Right. And then our last criteria
is the flow of the album. I think that kind of talks about kind of a little bit of connection there with faithfulness to the topic and theme. Is there some kind of flow, maybe even some kind of, not necessarily a storytelling component, but it could be. I know some albums will have that that feel to them. But it doesn't have to be a storytelling component. But if it, like a good story flows and doesn't skip around too much, a good album, I think, should do that as well.
And I want to point out both of the albums we picked came out as CDs, which I think it's not really a big thing anymore that I'm picking up on with digital downloads. The order of the songs isn't really that important, and artists are not necessarily feeling the need to tell a story anymore. I think both of these albums did, but I personally think that makes it a richer experience when you're listening to a CD that tells a story. And I'm saying CD because that was probably the last medium. I mean, even though CDs were easily, you could skip between songs. I think cassette tapes, you were able to fast forward, but it was sort of,
you had to work for it.
Yeah, so those still had it. And I don't, 8 tracks. Were you allowed to skip forward in 8 tracks?
I was right at the end of the 8-track experience. I'm a little bit older than you, but when I was mainly tapes, and then right at the very at the advent of CDs, when my dad brought the first CD home, and I said, "What is this?
Right?
How do you play this?"
Right.
But I think that's just a reflection of the, you know, the digital age that we're in now. When you were saying that the track order doesn't matter as much, when you go on iTunes or when you go on Amazon to buy music, you might not even buy the whole album. You might just buy one or two songs that you know or that you heard on the radio.
They encourage digital downloads of single songs.
Right, and it didn't used to be the case. When you wanted a single, they actually had to be released as a single, either on a tape or on a CD, and it might have, you know, one or two or maybe three songs on there. And I remember going to the music store, which really doesn't really exist anymore either, and buying singles.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like it is now where you could download literally any album, any song on an album can be considered a single because you're buying it by itself. So like you said, the track order and maybe the flow and the faithfulness to the topic maybe doesn't exist as much anymore.
All right, so now that you know we're talking about emotionally charged albums, we are pitting Nine Inch Nails' The Downward Spiral against Carly Rae Jepsen's Emotion.
Naturally, we would pit those two together, of
course. I mean, they're on different ends of the color wheel. They're both complementary and opposite. That's what I think of when I think of the two.
Definitely, definitely.
Okay,
so be interesting.
Let's go ahead and jump into the, we'll talk about chronologically. So The Downward Spiral came out in 1994.
And how old were you at that time?
I was, I was going to be 8 if it's in December, so probably 7. How old were you at
that
time?
I was 14 when that came out. That was like right up my alley when that song was coming out, when that album was coming out.
Yeah, I didn't listen to the whole CD until, we were actually talking about this earlier, I ordered it through the Columbia House CD.
Scam.
I mean, if you can get a CD for a nickel, I don't think that's a scam. However, I think I ended up having to pay $25 for a Black Sabbath CD, which is
good deal.
The definition of a criminal offense.
Oh.
But it all worked. I think it was like, it was probably like $10 a CD.
That's when new CDs were about 16 or 17 bucks.
Right. So, okay. So The Downward Spiral came out first. A little bit about it. As the title implies, it is Trent Reznor is the lead singer and sort of, would you use the word composer? Because a lot of the feeling comes from it's defined as industrial rock or industrial metal, but he was one of the, pioneer trailblazers. He was experimenting with it way before it was popular, or I think other artists were comfortable using that sort of stuff. So he sort of designed this sound to be negative and claustrophobic, and so sometimes you're listening to it, and I was listening to it on some headphones, and it would like sort of sway from one and then come back in, and there'd be a lot of screeching. And so, I mean, you just felt paranoid. This sounds like a negative criticism of the whole thing, but I think it's just like that emotional contagion. He does a really good job of bringing you into his headspace at the time.
It's kind of weird that you would describe it that way, and you would say it's depressing and it's going downward all the time, and there's just screeching, and it's just so erratic. But I loved it.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what it's held up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's, you use the word composer with him, and I think even to the point now where he's won an Oscar.
Pretty for, talented guy.
For the Social Network
yeah.
soundtrack. So
he works with David Fincher. I think he worked with him on Gone Girl too.
So he knew what he was doing even, you know, over 20 years ago.
Right.
As far as not just making music but arranging music and throwing those little nuances in, and you could definitely, you know, see that, especially now looking back at where he's gone to.
So
since then,
Dan did some research. So can you give us a little bit of background into where Reznor was coming from when he created this album?
Okay, so first thing is, not surprisingly, he was in the midst of a drug addiction during the recording of this album, which probably, you know, doesn't catch a lot of people off guard. But the weirdest, strangest, coolest kind of, I hate saying that,
fun fact.
The circumstance, fun facts for no one tell,
yeah,
was where it was recorded. It was actually recorded in his living room, but his living room was actually, he had purchased the house that was owned by Roman Polanski.
Famous director.
And his wife, Sharon Tate. And I believe it was 1969. Roman Polanski was out of the country. I think he was in Italy making a movie. And a very pregnant Sharon Tate was hosting some friends at the home. She was about 2 weeks away from giving birth. And the members of the Manson family, quote-unquote family,
yeah,
followers,
right,
got into the house, killed everybody in very creative ways, including Tate and her unborn child, and actually wrote the word pig on the door in Sharon Tate's blood. And that's what Roman Polanski was contacted by the authorities and came home, and that's what he found. And Trent Reznor, years later, bought the house and set up a little makeshift recording studio, which he called Le Pig.
Pretty dark.
In the same living room where many of those murders happen. So that just kind of tells you the ambiance he was going for and the kind of mindset he was in when he was making this album. That just kind of just paints the picture that
and,
going into
yeah.
to listening
and
to
I,
the album.
And when Dan and I discussed, one of the things we were going to look at where we were going to identify our favorite song, our least favorite song, and sort of the emotion that we thought this album was charged with. And I wrote down Hopeless for the emotion, angry, suicidal, and I wrote Betrayed with a question mark because I don't know. It doesn't feel like there was just one guy who made him mad, but it's sort of like other society or his family or something let him down. Like they had real sad stuff. Okay.
That kind of tied into, not to spoil my favorite song on the album was, but I think a lot of people, when they look at the album, the first song they would come up with would be Closer.
Right.
Just because that was the one that was probably...
it was a single.
And
played
on the radio a lot and had a really memorable video. And that probably actually pissed Trent Reznor off quite a bit, the fact that it had such crossover appeal.
Right.
Maybe it kind of felt to him like selling out or anything
right.
like that, even though it wasn't
yeah.
the intent of the song. But it wasn't that song that was my favorite, and it also wasn't Hurt,
okay.
which was covered later by
Johnny Cash.
It was actually Reptile.
Okay.
Which was...
Mortal Kombat fan.
Yes,
okay.
exactly. You were talking about how you said the word betrayed.
Right.
And in that song, it tells the story of Eve, who he refers to as a precious whore, and pulling him down with her trail of honey.
Got it.
And I'm wondering if that could have been about a female or right. if it could have been about the drugs.
Right.
But either way, I thought the metaphor was, it was a really, I don't want to say cool, but it was a really cool way of
right.
of describing whatever it was that was pulling him down. Or it could have been, you know, a record
right.
executive or somebody. And I think that's probably why I like that song
yeah.
so much, is it really kind of made you think, well, what was he thinking about when he wrote that song? I really, Reptile was my favorite song on the album.
My favorite was Piggy, mostly because, like, I thought that's... It sort of shows off his talents as a singer, too. It's sort of him, and it's sort of playful, but, like, with the heavy bass in the background and the industry sounds, but, like, it's more subtle of the ones. And then it's followed up by the March of the Pigs right after it, and I thought that was, like, a good segue, too. So
I'm glad that you didn't, that your favorite song was not my least favorite song. I was kind of...
Uh-oh. What was your least favorite song?
Heresy.
Oh, yeah.
The thing I didn't... Not that I hated the song, but the thing that made it my least favorite was just it came off as a bit lazy,
very
kind
trite.
Of convoluted, predictable, kind of...
Yeah, predictable is a very good word for it.
Kind of high school garage band, we hate the world kind of song,
yes.
You know, with quotes like, God is dead and no one cares. If there's a hell, I'll see you there.
It's, right.
It's,
and that's the chorus, by the way.
Right.
So if, in case you're like, oh... That was pretty edgy. It's like, oh, that's what you wanted us to take away from the song. That's very, very enlightened of you.
It was almost like they needed another song to fill out the
right.
album.
Right.
And it was like, oh, well, this one's kind of mean and
right.
kind of.
It's like the 16-year-old atheist who's definitely had his whole life to think about things, and he's going to share with you by yelling into a microphone how smart he is.
That's
and how
exactly.
dumb you are.
That's
right.
exactly what I was thinking. We were talking about. The flow of the album
mm-hmm.
and the faithfulness, and there was actually kind of a cool two-track beat if you caught it while you were listening to it. The song's The Becoming, and it goes into I Do Not Want This.
Right.
It kind of, to me, it kind of felt like they were their own little mini album,
mm-hmm.
those two songs there, because The Becoming talks about his desire to become numb, basically turning from a human into a robot,
mm-hmm.
to free him from these human feelings and emotions. But then it goes in right into the song "I Do Not Want This,"
right.
which kind of his indecision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it almost felt like somebody who's attempted suicide many
right.
times but couldn't complete
right.
the act because there's something that's keeping them here. It's something that's keeping them from you know, going all the way with that. And I thought that kind of told a little story just in that two songs.
Yeah.
That was not a total break from what the rest of the album was, but it was kind of its own story within a story.
And I think, especially with Mr. Self-Destruct, it just comes on strong. And I think the rest of the album comes into its own. It gets a little bit more mature with its anger, and it's not just yelling out. It's not just saying, oh, I hate God and formal religion and, you know, moms and all this stuff. It's identifying what's wrong, and then it's saying, oh, maybe I'm what's wrong. And then it's like it gets more introspective, and that's, I think, when it gets a little scarier as the audience. So my least favorite song was I Do Not Want This, and it wasn't necessarily the topics. It's just like that's when the novelty of how they were using the industrial sound started to wear off for me, because this album clocks in at just a little over an hour, and there were Trent Reznor's a talented musician, and you know, his band Nine Inch Nails doing a good job with, you know, there's good bass, good electric guitar, there's some drum, like a drum machine in there too, but at that point it had gotten a little overwhelming for me. It sort of sounded like the same thing over and over again. And then there was part where, like, the music went down and he started just talking directly into the microphone, and that's like a pet peeve of mine for an artist to do, mostly because it feels like not necessarily the fourth wall is gone, but it's like, hey, we're not sure, audience, you get this, so I'm going to literally stop what I'm doing and tell you. So,
and there was kind of along those same lines when I was listening to the album on headphones, like you were talking
right.
about. There was a couple times where I thought that my iPod had went out,
right?
Yeah. Because the volume changes were so drastic.
Right.
And I know, he's doing that on purpose.
Right.
And there's probably something behind the peaks and valleys, kind of maybe some tie into, human feelings and human emotions and how they go up and down and kind of like the roller coaster ride as far as that goes. But at times it did get a little disconcerting.
Right.
It did get a little, okay, we made your point now, and right. Now we're kind of taking it overboard. But, overall, like I said, even for it coming out in 1994, 22 years later, it mm-hmm. still holds up.
Yeah. It's definitely with that Hurt being covered by Johnny Cash, I even think Trent Reznor was, he didn't feel that was sort of like a stunt. I think that he actually came out and said that he was pretty happy with what happened with that. So, okay, now we're going to move on to album number 2, Carly Rae Jepsen's E, the sort of like a dot in the middle, Mo, then another dot, and then Shun, which I think is supposed to look like how it appears in a dictionary, where it's broken into 3 syllables, because I think I looked on the album. I didn't have the album. I just got like the digital thing. It has the definition of emotion. So that this album came out in 2015. It had its number one single was I Really Like You. So where the first one was about hopelessness and drug addiction induced possible suicidal thoughts, this is about new love. That's what I got off of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, what did you think? What did you get from it?
Well, first thing I wanted to ask you was whether or not you did like I did and listened to the 2 albums back to back.
I listened to them within the same day. There's like a 2-hour gap in there.
I had no gap
okay.
in between them. So
that's probably how you're supposed to listen to these 2.
I felt so uncomfortable. Am I sad? Am
right.
I happy? I listened to the Nine Inch Nails album,
right.
and I felt like I wanted to jump off a bridge.
Right.
And then,
mission accomplished.
And then the next, I literally had them loaded up so Carly Rae Jepsen would pop in right after the last Nine Inch Nails track. And it goes right into Runaway With Me.
Right.
Which was...
I liked it.
It was my favorite song on
right.
the album. my absolute favorite song on the album. The one I think that you were talking about, I Really Like You, has gotten the most radio airplay and has kind of become
right.
like was one of the songs of the summer.
It was a pre-release single, so right. that was the intention.
And credit to Carly Rae Jepsen for kind of getting out of the Call Me Maybe. I thought that was destined for one-hit wonder
right.
status, and then we would never hear from her again. But she's hung
Rebecca
around.
Black. Yeah.
Right. It's exactly what I thought of.
Right.
She did the Friday song. Right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. This album caused you to feel emotion, according to the as defined by Webster's Dictionary on the front of her album.
I wouldn't say that it caused me to feel emotion.
Okay.
So much so in the context that the Nine Inch Nails
right.
album depressed the hell out of me.
Right.
and made me feel like, well, this world does kind of suck.
Right.
And, I wouldn't say that it made me feel emotion. The thing that I did notice listening to them back to back is that it did pick up my spirits
mm-hmm.
quite a bit.
Right.
It made me feel like, oh, okay, well, there is things in this world that aren't so bad, and it's not all
and those
know,
things,
doom and gloom.
Those things are love.
Yeah, and amazing music.
Right.
Thank you, Carly Rae.
Hip hop, skipping around, you know. So my favorite song was the song Boy Problems, which I didn't know was going to be my favorite song, and I expected, I don't think I have listened to the whole single of I Really Like You, which I also enjoyed that song, mm-hmm. but I think that was too poppy for me mm-hmm. to fully enjoy, but Boy Problems I thought was funny as a song because I expected it to be about her boy problems, but it was actually... the narrator of the song. Can we just assume this is Carly Rae Jepsen, like, just talking?
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
Carly Rae Jepsen's, like, on the phone with her friend, and she's upset with her friend for constantly calling about nonsense. And she's like, yes, I have boy problems. I think my boyfriend broke up with me. I have bigger problems. And I'm just like, you know what? That's a pretty mature attitude, and I hope everybody gets that from this album.
And I think...
Or at least from this song.
I kind of felt the same way about the I really like you. It was a little too poppy for me, but I think you've got to have, if you're going to have an album that sells like they want it to sell, right, you have to have songs like that. And yeah, that's why I think Run Away With Me, for me, was, it's a very good pop song, but right, it's not too repetitive, right, and it's not too poppy.
It doesn't follow the rules of a pop song.
Right. It could still be a hit, but it doesn't have to be annoyingly so.
Right.
You know, insist upon its catchiness.
Yes.
And I think that it was just upbeat, catchy, not too repetitive, just a really good pop song. And I like how that was the first track on the album. They kind of came out.
Yeah, definitely. It came on strong.
Right, exactly. And especially it kind of pulled me out of the doldrums that Trent Reznor had put me in.
And so how I mentioned that I didn't like the use of Trent Reznor stopping and just talking to the audience, there was a part, my least favorite song was Warm Blood, which is a weird title, where she's talking to her audience, Carly Rae's talking to her audience, and I didn't like that. And then it got even weirder because there was like her talking, but then they auto-tuned it to a super bass. I'm just like, it wasn't doing it for me.
My least favorite song on the album was When I Needed You.
Okay.
And to me, the beginning of it, I don't know if you remember the show Knight Rider. You might be a little young for that.
I only remember it ironically, so but I'm going to go ahead and not address that question.
It kind of reminded me of an 80s TV show theme.
Yes!
The beginning.
Yes! Which I like. I think I like that.
I don't think I like it, but and then for the rest of the song, it sounded like she was... I know she's gone on record and said that she's a huge fan of Madonna and sees her as a huge influence and things like that. I think right, she tried to sound a little bit too much like 1980s Madonna.
Right.
Not even
Believe
like
our
90s.
Own
right. Even before that, I think, you know, like a prayer.
Okay,
and
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like a virgin. Like,
mm-hmm. Big on similes.
Right. And I think it's tried to sound too much like that. And it kind of came off to 1980-ish Paula Abdul for my liking. Not that it was unlistenable, but it's just I didn't really dig it.
I do have to say, I don't know if we were the demographic target audience for either of these CDs, but I can guarantee you we were not the target audience for Carly Rae Jepsen's Emotion.
You don't think that me as a 36-year-old man is what she was...
Are we both millennials? Because I still don't know what that word means.
I don't know what it means either.
Are you a Gen Xer? Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay, so, yeah. We're just in that, because there were the baby boomers, and the greatest generation. And then they had the baby boomers. Baby boomers had Gen X, and then...
Was Generation Next one of them?
I think that's like a Coca-Cola thing.
Ah.
Maybe Pepsi. Either way, and then there was Generation Y, and then there was...
That's not even going alphabetically. I don't like it.
Yeah. X, Y. That makes sense. You can't count up with generations. Anyway.
See, I disagree because I think Carly Rae was writing this specifically for men like me in their middle 30s.
But you didn't feel emotion. So, I mean...
That's not my fault, Mike.
You're saying she's a failure.
That's not my fault.
That hurts her feelings, her emotions.
She doesn't care.
That's... Yeah, she's actually doing very good.
So far beneath her that she doesn't care. But, I mean, it was a fun album to listen to.
I enjoy listening to it.
It's not slow. It's quick. It's catchy. It's upbeat.
It's not an hour and a half long.
I think it does what it's supposed to do.
Right.
Which is kind of, you know, just... be catchy and quick and have you know, fun beats and have you know, a couple of songs out there that can be released as successful singles and then you know, kind of pull you into buying the whole album. And I think that's what one of her producers was saying, is that when Call Me Maybe came out, we had a great song but no great album to tie in with it. Now we want to make a good pop album,
right?
And I think that's what they were trying to do. And I think they you know, accomplish their goal on that front.
And we have come up with the winner for today's Comparing Apples to Oranges, which was against Nine Inch Nails, The Downward Spiral, and Carly Rae Jepsen's Emotion. So, just a quick reminder, we looked at four criteria. We talked about the re-listenability of the CD. Could you listen to it more than once? Did you want to listen to it more than once? The faithfulness of the CD to its topic or theme. The CD's emotional contagion. Could you feel what the artist was feeling when they wrote the album? And last of all, the flow of the album. Did it stick with one theme, story, or emotional arc, and it follow it the whole way through? So, looking at those four criteria, that rubric, that scoring guide, we're going to talk about which one we think did the best. Dan, do you want to go first, or you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, go ahead.
For re-listenability, I actually gave it to Carly Rae Jepsen.
Me too. I think we both had listened to The Downward Spiral before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we say that we don't want to listen to it all the time, that's not necessarily us just poo-pooing it. We have listened to it before, and we're like, you know what? This, you know, once every 7 years,
that's fine.
Not a huge deal.
That's fine.
Great album.
It's a very good album. Like
talented,
I said, it holds up.
Trailblazing.
You know, it could easily have been released in 2015
mm-hmm.
and still been successful.
But you don't put it in the car when you're going on a
no.
road trip.
And what else, that's what I was kind of thinking about is like if you were going to, you know, walk your dogs, or you were going to, you know, be doing chores around the house and have your headphones on.
Which is what we were both doing.
I probably want to listen to Emotion.
Right.
But just because, you know, I don't want to feel like I want to kill myself. That's not a good feeling.
No. And it's not really one of those things where you're like, you know what? I think I'm just going to listen to Reptile and then I'm going to listen to something. No. Reptile doesn't make sense on its own either.
And we were talking about that before we started recording with movies. And talking about movies that are nominated for Oscars every year.
Right.
No Doubt, you know, the people that know movies.
No Doubt made a movie?
No.
I would not watch that.
No. It was a concert film. It was great. It was in 3D.
I'd watch that.
But the experts that say these movies are amazing.
Right.
They know better than we do what, you know, makes quote-unquote a great movie.
Right.
However, many of those movies you'll watch once and you will never watch them again. And it's not, they're not one of those movies that you're flipping through channels and you see it in the middle of the movie.
Oh, sweet. Spotlight.
Oh, great. Brooklyn.
Let's derail my day.
Yeah. It's not one of those movies that you would want to, you know, just sit down. Oh, I'm going to catch the end of this. But if, you know, a movie that's more fun, that's, you know, something that you saw when you were a kid, or something that you saw when you were a teenager, or something that you saw that you just thought was a fun movie
that did not emotionally scar you.
Right.
Right.
You would catch that in the middle of the movie and watch it to the end.
Right.
And I think that's kind of more of Carly Rae's album, is that it was more of a fun album, so I think it's got more likelihood of being re-listened to.
Right.
Several times, and I think it's just, you know, more upbeat, more kind of what you would want to have playing on a day-to-day basis.
I'm with you too. You pretty much hit most of my major points. I think this would be an album that you feel comfortable sharing with other people or listening to. Would you stop sneezing over there? Come on, go upstairs. Stop sneezing. This was one of those albums where I thought I wouldn't mind if someone caught me listening to it, or you could stop in the middle and be like, hey, this is a couple good songs. I want you to listen to this. Where with Nine Inch Nails, you might recommend it to somebody to like point out, like, this is, you know, a really important part of 90s metal history. Or if you liked, you know, the new Nine Inch Nails stuff, you would really like the old stuff, because that's when, you know, he was figuring out his sound and it was a little bit more raw. But re-listenability, definitely going with Carly Rae on this one. All right, next one is the faithfulness to its topic or theme. You want me to go? You.
Go ahead.
I definitely think that this one goes to Nine Inch Nails on this one. I thought they were, there wasn't a part of any song that wasn't evocative of the idea of downward spiraling. I thought that everything from the angry sounds to like the ambient noise that would, you know, the harsh white noises too, and like the all of the lyrics sort of stuck with the same. It was faithful to its theme or arc, I thought.
And I agreed. I picked the same thing, Nine Inch Nails, Downward Spiral for faithfulness. And I thought it was very clear, even from the title, the Downward Spiral. That's mm-hmm. that's where we're going with this album. And I think that every single track on there invoked that feeling. And that theme, and I think and emotion had some of those qualities to
right.
it, but I think its theme was more I'm boy crazy,
right? I'm in love. I'm kind of not in love,
but
it's too early to be love,
right? And you could see each one of those songs in isolation,
right?
Whereas the Nine Inch Nails album really kind of fits together in a puzzle that connects to the theme that they were trying to go for.
Right. And then what about emotional contagion? So the ability for the artist or album to make you feel how they were feeling. You want to go or me?
I'll go on that
okay.
one, and I'm pretty sure you're going to agree with me that it was the Nine Inch Nails album.
Definitely.
Just because of, I felt like crap
right.
when I got done listening to that album.
I was angry and sad at the
I
same time.
I was. And you really, and then when you go back and you look at the story
right.
behind the recording of it and what he was going through in his personal life, it really made even more sense.
Right.
When we were talking about all the trouble he went through to pick his recording spot for that album, that just tells you the kind of...
He made a conscious decision.
Absolutely.
To surround himself with that.
Absolutely. That's just kind of... You don't just do that on a whim. Like, oh, this would be cool to record our album here.
Like the real estate agent said, I got a great deal in a great neighborhood.
Yeah, I wonder why I got such a good deal on this, like, on this house.
You got to spend money on like putting up sound, like baffling equipment in your own living room. You're like... He's not saving money. He did this on purpose.
He'd have to buy so many eggs to put the egg cartons up.
No,
everywhere.
You take the cartons, you leave the eggs. That way it'd save a lot of money.
I just think you got to eat a lot of eggs. But the, I mean, the Carly Rae album, the thing that I said earlier that it did do was it, listening to him back to back, it pulled me up out of that dark area that the Nine Inch Nails album was put in. But that doesn't mean that I was feeling... what her emotions were.
Yeah, when you were done, you were sort of done with it. I mean,
right. I think it was just more because it was upbeat,
yeah.
more fun, less experimental, mm-hmm. kind of more straightforward.
Right.
This is supposed to be fun music. And there's a little bit of a message to it, but not as much as the feelings I got from listening to the Downward Spiral.
Right. And so, sort of caveat, when we learned the phrase emotional contagion, we were also informed from our expert, the sneezy psychologist, that...
It's a great nickname.
Look for her on Twitter, everybody.
Sneezypsychologist.com. .org.
The doctor is in. Apparently, the emotions that can be caught are always negative emotions that you can't actually, quote-unquote, catch as a contagion. Positive emotions, but they can remind you of positive things. So I think that's it to a T with...
Yeah.
With Carly Rae, we're like, oh, you know, I remember, you know, being young and it being summertime and it being exciting. Where the Downward Spiral, you're like, oh, Trent Reznor, those sad feelings are now my sad feelings.
Absolutely.
So, okay, and our last criteria point was the flow of the album. And I think this sort of goes with what we've been saying, so I'm going to go ahead and say it, and Dan, you can say yours. I went with Nine Inch Nails again. Carly Rae was upbeat most of the time, but there wasn't, I think, a narrative for us to necessarily follow besides into this one guy, and we don't know if he's into her, and then they are into each, and then her friend. But Trent Reznor's Here's Where We're Starting. And, you know, it gets darker. And then I actually, some of my favorite parts, what I was saying about Piggy, and like we got to see him as someone who was singing instead of, you know, him as a vocalist instead of just as a musician. I kind of enjoyed that. Take the skin, peel it back. Doesn't it make you feel better? The pigs have won tonight. They can all sleep soundly. And everything is all right. That was my favorite part from March of the Pigs, was when we sort of get that it's going to be upbeat. Listen, he's, you know, the music not as angry right now, and then we fall right back into the rage noises and the industrial, you know, the metallic sounds and all that stuff. I thought that, like, not a moment that he's going to let us up from what he's experiencing. I don't know. We were talking about the flow of the album.
Nine Inch Nails got that one just because we talked about how an album should have some kind of flow to it, and that kind of ties into the faithfulness to the topic, but not they're kind of similar, but not really the same. Is right. When you think about a story should stick to a theme, but a story should also have some fluency to it. It shouldn't be just random ideas thrown together
all on the same topic,
and just because you put them together in a paragraph, right, that makes a story. So if you take just a bunch of random songs and throw them together on an album, that doesn't mean that there's any kind of continuity or flow there.
Right.
And I think that the downward spiral is exactly what the name, mm-hmm, you know, says it was. It was a downward spiral, even to the point where at the very end, it went out of, mm-hmm, lyrical form and went more into experimental, mm-hmm, instrumentation.
Right.
And that kind of reminds me of growing up listening to the Beatles. There was albums like that where it would start off really heavy with songs that had a lot of verses and had a lot of repetition to them. Mm-hmm. And then they gradually, as the album went on, you got into like the weirder, right, kind of, I hate to keep using the word experimental, but the weirder kind of instrumental mixes that they would put together.
Right, they didn't have to follow as many conventions.
Exactly.
Once they got past, once you bought the CD or album because of the first couple songs, they were given a little bit more free rein.
And I thought that the Carly Rae Jepsen album, the 12 tracks on that album all could be released as singles and not necessarily have to be, not that they have to flow into like a story concept, but they should, the ideas and how they go from track to track, there should be a little bit of continuity and flow there.
Yeah. I'm always looking for a narrative, and I think that where we started with Nine Inch Nails, with whether you started with Heresy or Mr. Self-Destruct, and how we ended up at Hurt, you see somebody sort of flailing about, sort of like with an aimless, you know, nameless anger, and then by the end they're like, I don't feel anything anymore. I think that's sort of whether you agree that that's a good story or not, it's well told. So I think that's why I definitely gave that one to Nine Inch Nails. Okay, so looking at our criteria, we came up with Nine Inch Nails definitely won this one. When I went into it, I did not think that was going to happen, mostly because it's like we said, it's not, you know, we're not feeling great about it. We're not going to recommend everybody go, oh, okay, you should go and listen to it. It's, you know, for the reasons we just said, plus it's like, it's probably a staple of like American music history.
I think you should... You should listen to it just in the fact, it's kind of like those Oscar movies. You should see them because it won an Oscar for Best Picture back in 1972. You should see it.
The Chinatown reference?
I'm not sure.
Roman Polanski.
Gandhi, maybe? I don't know. 1972?
I didn't see Gandhi.
You should see it because it's a part of American culture, but you'll probably never watch it again.
But it's like the Indian guy played by a white guy. That's, yeah, Ben Kingsley.
Naturally.
He's British. None of this sounds like America.
There's a lot of layers there, and I think that's what makes it so great.
Not unlike The Glass Onion by the Beatles.
But I've never seen it either.
Full circle.
So neither one of us, just on record, have never seen Gandhi. I'll probably see it at some point in my life.
I don't want to see it. No.
You'll see it at some point in your life, and you'll never watch it again. But
anyway.
And I think the Nine Inch Nails album is kind of the same thing, is that it, not to say that it's as important as like Revolver by the Beatles, or, you know, Exile on Main Street by the Rolling Stones. It's not like that kind of importance in music history, but it does have its place, and it, mm-hmm, is something that I think everybody should listen to. But it's not like, hey, I'm not going to go out for a jog. What am I going to listen to? Oh, the Downward Spiral.
Right.
Because, you know, by the time you get halfway through your jog, you'll be sitting on the side of the road in tears, trying to call somebody to come pick you up.
Like, can I even feel anymore?
I mean, God's dead, right. So what's the point?
Now I'm just some sort of reptile robot.
I just want to be a robot.
Right. What we're saying is, give Carly Rae a listen. You're going to hear her on the radio. Mm-hmm.
And you'll like it.
Yeah, but being compared to Nine Inch Nails, we're going to give this one to The Downward Spiral.
Yep.
now we're on to our very last segment of the podcast. We're going to give some recommendations for the genre we were talking about, which today was emotionally charged albums. Dan, do you want me to go first?
Go ahead.
Okay, so when I think emotionally charged album, the first thing that pops in my head is 10,000 Days by the band Tool. I know there's a bunch of Tool fans out there. They're a really great band. I don't think anybody's not a fan of Tool. I think a lot of people haven't listened to them, or they listened to them with someone that they didn't like. I think that's my opinion on the band Tool. So anyway, the lead singer, Maynard, his mother had been diagnosed with, this is a true story, was diagnosed with, I don't know if it was a form of cancer, degenerative disease, and she was like effectively dying for almost 30 years, and then she passed away and he wrote this album. There's two really powerful songs. It actually leads off the CD with, it's almost like 15 minutes about like her and how, you know, her pain and his pain, and sort of this is, even though it's sad, this is sort of a release and an emotionally charged album. You could feel what he was feeling, and I thought, talk about re-listenability. I listened to that a lot. The way he was telling the story was so evocative and so interesting. And he also, his band does a lot of interesting stuff with, keep using the same word, experimental sounds, and the way they'll bring in like unusual instruments and musical themes are really interesting to follow. And I just thought that was great. Dan, what about you? What recommendation would you like to make for an emotionally charged album?
I didn't really have one going in, but
drop the ball.
But you know, as we started kind of coming up,
drop the ball. It's over. Podcast.
No,
over.
But you can pick up the fumble and keep running.
I'm not familiar with the sport reference you're making right now.
This would be American foosball, I believe. When we were kind of coming up with our criteria, I really like albums that are connected and kind of have some kind of story or flow to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that immediately popped into my mind was 21st Century Breakdown by Green Day.
Okay. I was worried you were going to say American Idiot by Green Day.
You were worried I was going to say that?
Yeah.
Why would you be worried about that?
Because that's when the Billy Joel started to lose his edge, in my opinion.
Okay.
Sorry. Go ahead.
See, and I think that that's why I like 21st Century Breakdown a little bit more. It came after it. And it was, the albums actually broke up into three acts, almost like a play. And they actually ended, you know, some of those songs actually made it into the American Idiot musical.
Cool.
But I like the fact that there is kind of an overarching story of these two different sides of himself played out through these two characters,
mm-hmm.
Christian and Gloria, and Gloria's kind of still got like the sense of goodness inside and sense of positivity, and then the character of Christian kind of has the inner demons and victimizing themselves, and it's kind of like the downward spiral, the diet version of that, or the light version of that. So you can listen to it and it's still got some, you know, a lot of cool tempo and, mm-hmm. and stuff to it, to where you could listen to it
right
in the car, mm-hmm. and not be super depressed, but you can also feel the different emotions that are coming through the songs. And there's not a lot of singles that came off that album, because I don't think the album was written
right
in that, with that context in mind. I think there was Know Your Enemy is a song that I think got some single play.
Yeah.
And then 21 Guns that got some single play too.
Right.
But out of like 18 tracks on the album, two of them I guess could kind of be pulled out and be played as singles. But most of all, it's like one big story that kind of fits together. And you could kind of get this roller coaster of emotion rides in there, but it's still a fun album to listen to.
That's great. Just a little bit of housework. We're going to do some plugs. Dan, besides being the co-host of this podcast, is also the co-host of another podcast, and he writes for a online sports magazine.
Go Sports!
Top sports teams, Dan, go.
Cardinals?
Oh, wait, sorry. so let me do that again. Dan is a writer for?
InsideSTL.com, based out of here in St. Louis. And I cover mixed martial arts and also pro wrestling for InsideSTL.com. And one of my colleague, Dane McGuire, and I have recently launched an MMA podcast that's starting to pick up some steam called Punch Drunk Radio. And right now, probably the easiest way to get that is either through InsideSTL.com. All the episodes are posted there. But you could also search for Punch Drunk Radio on YouTube. And very soon, you'll be able to subscribe to it on iTunes and download it directly to your mobile device of your choice. So it'll make it even easier. So you can follow me at Dan Rino, DanRyno, on Twitter. You can read my stuff on InsideSTL.com, or you can search for the podcast soon on iTunes.
And I'm going to put all these links up on the Tumblr, put up all the links for this stuff. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the first podcast, and I hope you enjoyed it. Look us up on Tumblr. We are comparingapplestooranges, all one word, .tumblr.com. That's where all of the links for my co-hosts and info about upcoming and past episodes will be. Any comments or ideas for future podcasts, go ahead and follow us on Twitter. We are at The Cato Podcast, C-A-T-O Podcast, all one word. Or you can email us at catopodcast@gmail.com. The music that was used today on the podcast, which was not Carly Rae Jepsen or Nine Inch Nails, was from freemusicarchive.org, and we listened to Leisure B and their song Thumbs Up. Thanks. Bye.